And we're talking about the narcissism epidemic. Keith Campbell with us, and we're going to take your calls when we come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Keith Campbell with us, of course, and we're going to take your phone calls as we talk about narcissism. Let's go back to the mythology where they came up with this name, Keith. I had mentioned it was Greek mythology that got that. Poor guy looked at himself in a pond, and look what happened to him now.
Yeah. So the story is, I mean, there's multiple versions like all these myths, but he was attractive son of deities and was too beautiful for anybody, and even this woman Echo, who was in love with him and repeated everything he said, and eventually Narcissus looked into a pond, fell in love with his own reflection and drowned or killed himself, and then turned into the Narcissus flower, which is why we have the name Narcissus for the daffodil, some forms of it at least.
I love it. Let's take some calls here for you. Some people have been waiting a long time. Woody in Whitehall, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program, Woody. Go ahead. Woody with us? Nope, Woody's not there, unfortunately. Let's try Jerry in Lincoln, Illinois. Jerry, let's try you.
Yes, sir.
There you are.
Yeah, you know, what I'm curious about with the term narcissism, you know, it's just as easy for it to have it be a double-edged sword. You know, for those that are really intelligent and try to relate, sometimes it's hard for them to communicate.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So, you know, basically what I'm saying is, that term has been put into a dictionary. It's being used in medical terms and that type of thing. So, you know, if you really think about it, in some ways, you know, you look at people like Einstein and different people that were truly, really intelligent, you know, they could come off as being narcissistic.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a question I often get is, well, if you're really good, are you narcissistic? And I think the issue is in the case of not Einstein or anybody, you know, maybe Einstein hanging out with his buddies at the, you know, at Princeton did come across as a little bit narcissistic in argument or debate. But then when he went and related to people outside of his lab, was he the same way, or was he a relatively kind and compassionate human being? And from what I understand, he was a reasonably kind and compassionate human being. So I think you can be narcissistic in one domain, and believe me, I'm an academic. I know about that. I'm guilty of that myself in the domain. But are you that way across all of your life?
Keith, would you say that somebody who is excellent, superb at what they do, and they make no bones about it, is narcissistic, or just merely confident with what they do?
No, I would say if somebody is accurately that good at something, they would be, you know, reasonable to say I'm just that good. That said, most people I know, and this might be something unique to academics, maybe it's not the case, but I bet it's the case in technology and everything else. People who are good are always thinking about what they don't know rather than what they know. So they might say, yeah, I'm pretty good at this, but I need to figure out this, and we need to go this direction, and we need to do this. And they're always thinking about what's unsolved or unknown. They don't think of themselves as having climbed some giant mountain and they're just sitting there with the flag on it.
Like Muhammad Ali during his boxing days. I think he was the best for the moment.
Yeah.
He was a great showman. He was a good entertainer, a superb boxer. I don't think he was narcissistic at all. I think what he did was he just drummed up enough support to get people interested in boxing.
Yeah, it's a great character to play. It's that sort of, you know, prideful character that people love to, they root for him or they hate. You know, you see him in professional wrestling all the time. You see it in pro sports. We have certain people who come across as very narcissistic, and they'll get followers for that. And it makes people hate them or like them, and it's good for entertainment.
Yes, exactly. And there's that line where, you know, that entertainment's important. It develops things, it makes ratings, it does whatever it has to do. Yeah.
Right.
So it's
but there's a case
purpose.
In sports where, you know, you could be a self-promoting blowhard on a team, and if you're doing it a little bit, it's fine. But if, you know, quarterback starts doing it too much, and the front line's going to start letting people through.
Yeah.
You know, so you have
right.
to really walk a line doing that.
Woody's in Pennsylvania. Let's go back to Woody. Woody, go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning. What about the epidemic on social media? I mean, you have all the selfies on Twitter, on Vine. You have everybody wants to be a video star and a comedian. When I was a kid, you'd have home movies. Now, you know, for the family to enjoy. Now it's like, well, let's make this movie and well, let's post it to YouTube and get it to go viral as fast as we can. So it seems like it's all about me with all social media.
What has social media, Keith, done to narcissism?
Yeah, it's fascinating. On one hand, you know, social media is, we don't remember this, but it's, you know, Facebook, we're talking, been around, you know, maybe a decade, around a decade, maybe a little less, depending on where you put the cutoff. What we find in the research on Facebook with narcissism are that people who are narcissistic do have more connections than others. They're more self-promoting in their photos. They show, you know, more glamour shots or more, you know, they're better looking photos. They might self-promote more in how they describe themselves. So they tend to use social media as a tool for looking good and gaining attention. That said, people use social media for different reasons. People can use it to keep touch with their family. They can use it for humor. I mean, there's a lot of uses for it as well, just like television. I mean, you can watch self-promoting narcissistic garbage, or you can watch, you know, really interesting stuff as well. We're starting to study Instagram and look at selfies now. My guess is we're going to find similar things where people who are narcissistic are using it maybe more and maybe for more self-promotional reasons. Frankly, these changes are stunning, though. That when I first heard about a camera that was designed to take pictures of the person holding it, I thought, oh, my God, what's going on with the world?
Yeah.
And now the fact that everybody's doing this and then sending it, I mean, this is bizarre. I mean, my grandmother would be just spinning, trying to wrap her mind about around this. And narcissism is a piece of it, but it's not the only piece.
Well, when you said that narcissistic people don't hurt other people, do they end up, Keith, hurting themselves?
Oh, they can hurt other people, but necessarily do it. Yeah, I mean, they certainly can hurt other people. They do in relationships a lot. They do when they, you know, destroy a company to make their stock options go up and then move on to another company. So they definitely can hurt other people. What I meant was they don't wake up in the morning and say, how am I going to go hurt people? It's more, you know, how can I get what's in it for me? And I don't really care about other people quite as much, if that makes sense.
When someone who is narcissistic hurts somebody, is it done with intent, or does it just happen because that they're narcissistic?
I think it typically is not. It's almost like, most often I think it would be done as just an oversight, like collateral damage. Oh, well, this happened, you know, and there'd be some excuse making for it, except in the case where it was a response to a threat. And then I think the aggression is very direct. So in our lab studies, we have people come in and insult each other, and people who are narcissistic will physically try to hurt other people for that with intent. But I think taking over a business and you know, stripping the pension fund and moving on it's not done to hurt people. It's done to benefit the self.
Let's go east. Carolyn in Washington, Missouri now. Carolyn, go ahead.
Well, hi.
Hi.
I have even a ton more questions after sitting here listening to the show. But what I really was interested in was the narcissist connected to the psychopath.
Okay. Keith,
let's elaborate that a little bit?
Yeah, would you?
Yeah.
Well,
I have a son who is apparently that. And I would like a little bit more understanding. And then I'm told to just vacate the presence as far as he's concerned. And being his mother, this is difficult for me. But I also want to protect myself.
Yeah. When you think about, you know, there's all these things have some definitions, and psychopath isn't something that's in the, you know, diagnostic and statistic manual of the APA. It's something people write about as a personality disorder, but it's not sort of codified in that way. Generally, you think of psychopaths as having a couple factors to it. The first is this, it is narcissism. It's that glib, superficial charm. It's thinking you're better than other people, being willing to exploit people. And then with that, you also have this element of impulsivity where you'll just do, you know, you'll do things that benefit yourself, and you're willing to hurt other people, even if you're going to get caught. You just do dumb things and destructive things, and you don't really, the consequences don't really matter so much. That piece of it is not something you see with narcissism.
Do they want to get caught?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think there are people out there. I mean, there might be in certain very strange situations, but generally, you know, people who are psychopaths don't want to get caught. It's just you do things without thinking about future consequences. And when you do that, you're much more likely to get caught, unless you're incredibly clever.
We go next to Greg in Los Angeles. Welcome to the program. Greg, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey guys. I just have a question about, like, a real-world example.
Sure.
What about Dr. House from Gregory House from HouseMD?
Yeah, he's such an interesting character because he has some narcissism. He has some, you know, some very antisocial tendencies, some risk taking. You know, he might describe himself as a high functioning psychopath, which is somebody who has callous disregard for other people, but isn't quite as impulsive. Plus an addiction issue. So he has these characteristics. In real life, House would have been fired and thrown in jail, you know, after the second episode, I think. So, which makes him such an interesting character in that way. He you know, somebody like that just doesn't exist. But he shares some of those traits.
Okay. Hope
another,
that helps
I
you,
mean,
Greg.
If you're looking for TV examples, like, you know, the classic psychopath would be somebody like Hannibal Lecter, even in that new show Hannibal. Has that, you know, is a psychopath. But again, in a case like that, it's somebody with very high self-control, which is very high functioning.
Somebody like Johnny Carson, Keith, who, you know, after the show, he would be, you know, a loner most of the time. How would you categorize someone like that?
You know, I don't know. I never met him. I don't know. He could be somebody who's just very, very introverted and probably, you know, he obviously not a self-promotional guy. He was never out there drawing attention to himself. I think he was described as a generous guy, but an interesting case of somebody who's very introverted, but his gift was doing something that was very public.
Yes, and it worked well.
My guess is, if he were that introvert, it's probably very hard for him to do that show every night, and he probably needed to retreat just to energize himself.
Just to get away.
Yeah.
Steve is in Shelton, Washington. Steve, first-time caller. Thanks for calling, Stephen. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I just had a question about a potential person that could have a lot of influence over our lives here, maybe in the near future, and that's Hillary Clinton. During the Bill Clinton White House days, there were stories told about Hillary, how the staff was told not to look her directly in the eyes, look down when she would walk by. There was a lot of incidents where she would kind of just downplay things that happened, especially when she was Secretary of State, and she, you know, eventually resigned, I think, to kind of avoid some of the problems. But what if she became president? I mean, do you think she has traits of narcissism, and what might that lead to?
Well, I think anybody who is working that hard to be president of the United States and ruler of the, you know, free or formerly free world has some of those traits. I don't know her. I don't know. I mean, the story that always got me of her was when she was under fire, I think, in Sarajevo, and it turned out she was coming off the plane with Sinbad the comic. I mean, but politicians have this ability to turn, you know, to make things much more dramatic and narrative. So, yeah, I think she's cut from a similar cloth as a lot of politicians.
Maybe so.
That's a little bit of a cagey answer, but I just, you know.
Well, it's safe to say, as we have gone through, almost every politician has this trait.
Yeah. Let me add something to that. What's really interesting is when we looked at the historical data, if you look back at the, you know, the founding, not just the founding fathers, but the early politicians, other than Andrew Jackson, they all were much lower on narcissism. This is a more recent phenomenon. This sort of the narcissistic politician in the United States. Just to throw that out there.
All right, next up, let's go to Mike in Connecticut. Welcome to the program. Michael, go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How you doing? Chilling
good.
In Connecticut.
Good,
I have a historical example. How about General George Patton?
Yeah, he's a fascinating example because he strikes me as, you know, as sort of this grandiose narcissist who thought of himself as you know, playing this incredibly important historical role. And he was a great figure, but it also cost him. And I also have a personal story. I had a colleague in our department who passed away, but actually fought for Patton and Bradley. And Patton was the showboat, and Bradley was the sort of the non-narcissistic, you know, the soldier's general. And I asked this colleague of mine, I said, what did you guys think about Patton? He said, he was the worst. You know, we up-armored all our tanks, you know, put sandbags on them and things, and Patton came and made us take them off because we looked weak. We go out and get killed by the Panzers.
We could use another Patton today and stick them on ISIS. What do you think?
Well,
yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Let's bring them back. We need them.
we need some tough people like that and to deliver. We really do. Keith, if people want the book, The Narcissism Epidemic, where do they get it?
Well, Amazon or at their local bookstore, whatever they prefer.
Okay, and how about your website?
It's everywhere. WKeithCampbell.com.
All right, that's easy enough. And we've got a link there for you at coasttocoastam.com. And what are your next projects? What do you work on next?
Well, I mean, we're trying to figure out some more of this online stuff with selfies and things like that. I'm looking a lot at geek culture with some of my grad students, and things like Dragon Con, which I find really interesting.
Oh, it's amazing what's happening there. Keith, stay with us. We're going to come right back and take final phone calls with you in just a moment. Those of you on hold, just hang where you are. We will get you and take final calls before we move on to Lynn McTaggart and some of her work with Intention on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Keith Campbell with us. We're going to take your final calls with him in just a moment. If you haven't had a chance yet to watch our television program, Beyond Belief, go ahead. It is free for 10 days. And then you can look at all the other videos, hundreds of other programs out there beyond just ours. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com, and sign up, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back with Keith Campbell. Keith, are narcissistic people generally happy people?
They, you know, when people who are narcissistic make their life work, they're generally happy. Meaning if they're getting the praise they think they deserve and the attention they deserve, they're generally happy. Yes.
Okay. If they don't, then they pout or what?
Yeah, there's usually, you know, there's often aggression and anger and then over time, depression. So narcissism seems to make you happy in the short term. In the long term, you maybe get depressed and maybe a little upset.
Are they bipolar people?
No. When you know, when people are manic and people with bipolar disorder going through a mania phase, you can see grandiosity. You know, people like, I'm awesome, I'm going to do this, I'm going to build this, which is similar to narcissism. But with bipolar, it seems to be different. It goes in cycles. The ideas are more grandiose. I mean, the ideas are grandiose rather than the person being grandiose. So they're different things, but they have some similarities.
Let's go to Chris in Salem, Oregon. Chris, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. I just wanted to talk about narcissism and pop stars and how it's like influencing the culture nowadays where, hello?
I can hear you, but you sound really muffled, Chris. Okay, not going to work. Let's go to Candy in Clarkston, Michigan. Oh. Hey, Candy, go ahead.
Hello, George. Let me please allow me to send my condolences for your sister passing.
You were welcome. Thank you.
My question is, I recently remarried, and I love is blind, but I thought the individual just had a little bit of narcissism quirks. But in the end, having four children in the medical field, they made me aware that he had Asperger's. So can you please explain to me the difference between Asperger's and narcissism and how they can be closely related?
Yeah, what's interesting about that is in both cases you're talking about, I mean, an Asperger's is kind of this inability to sort of socially connect to people, and so you might appear oblivious to their needs because you don't really have that social communication component. You see that with some, you know, scientists or engineers, sort of anecdotally at least.
Difficult times in social, right? People with Asperger.
Pardon?
People with Asperger have difficult times in social settings, don't they?
Yeah, and that can come across as narcissistic because you think, well, this person cares more about what they're doing than me, or they're not paying attention to my needs. But maybe they're just not getting the cues. So it will look like narcissism. It's not necessarily the same thing.
Now, let's analyze that for just a little bit. Let's say you're at a party and you're talking to someone, and they're not even looking at you. They're looking over your shoulder. They want to see who's coming in the door or whatever. Is that a narcissistic person?
Well, it's really hard in those social situations because on one hand, you can have somebody who's socially shy or socially anxious, and you go, well, they're not talking to me because they think they're better than me. And you can mistake their sort of social anxiety or in the last case, sort of Asperger's, as sort of aloofness or haughtiness. It might not be the same thing. What you see, though, sometimes with people who are narcissistic is if they think you're an important person, they'll put all their energy into talking to you. If they think you're not an important person, they might ignore you in order to show you power. They might, when you talk to them, let their eyes glaze over just to show they don't really care what you're saying. So it's a way of establishing power with you. Or at a conference, you know, this happens at conferences where they'll look over your shoulder to see if there's something more important that comes into the room. That's more what narcissism looks like. But what they'll do is if it's somebody important, they'll put the energy into it. If it's somebody not important, they won't.
Mitch is in Sacramento. Your turn, Mitch. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, guys. Thank you so much. I love your show, George. So
thank you.
I'm a young 21-year-old performer, and this subject is so amazing. Because it's something that I think about a lot. Now, is there a right or wrong way to be narcissistic? Because in the entertainment field, when you see how the media is brainwashing these young kids today, almost every movie, someone takes their shirt off, or, you know, people are Instagramming pictures of themselves. And there's a certain level of confidence, I feel like, when you're about to hit a stage that you need to tell yourself that you're going to be great and no one is better at this job than you. Be able to power through it, because I used to suffer from major stage fright. But when you do that, it kind of helps. I feel like confidence and narcissism are very closely related, and there can be a right and a wrong way. But people who are these bodybuilders who use Instagram to try to inspire people to get in shape, you know, when you see people really using it to benefit other people, is there really a right or a wrong way to be narcissistic?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Two answers. One, as I mentioned earlier, I think in the last hour, was that I think that having narcissism as a tool in your toolbox is something you can use on occasion especially with performance, is very useful. Secondly, we can align narcissism with social ends. So, you know, there's the example of what you're saying is people showing up their bodies to inspire other people. There's the example of people driving, you know, getting positive attention for driving environmental cars or whatever is a way that, you know, that might inspire other people to do it. There's thing, you know, there's the ice bucket challenge, you know, which is going around. There's a lot of motives for that. I think a lot of that's social and challenging, but there's probably some narcissism in that as well. So we can use narcissism for good ends, or we can use it for bad ends.
When people are narcissistic and they do what they do, are they aware that that's what they are?
Yeah, there's some awareness of that. It's not a delusion. I'm stumbling here trying to phrase it, but people who are narcissistic will say, yeah, I think I'm a little cocky. I'm real hyper-confident. You know, I'm a little bit narcissistic. They might not think it's as much of a problem. They might think it's the best way to live their life because of the demands of the world, but there is some awareness of it.
Kyle is with us now in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Carl. Welcome to the show, Kyle.
Thank you. I was curious if you had any examples of people or if it's even possible to be narcissistic with very low self-esteem. Someone like Kurt Cobain kind of comes to mind. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great question. There is a form of narcissism that we talk about, which is vulnerable narcissism. These are people who, you know, I always imagine a guy living in his mom's basement, you know, yelling at the TV because he should have won the X Factor or something. But it's people who have this somewhat inflated view of themselves, but also are insecure and have low self-esteem at the same time, which is, it's weird when you think about it, but it happens a lot. When you look at narcissism in the world, what you see are people like that with this vulnerability end up seeing psychologists because of the depression and low self-esteem. And so often in clinical settings, you find a lot of that. But when you look at your boss or the person you're dating, you don't find the low self-esteem as much.
No, not at all. With this, let's get back to this dark triad for a moment. Where does a serial killer fit in?
You know, serial killers, the classic serial killer would be somebody who's a psychopath. And some of these spree killings, though, we see, you'll see narcissism. So in some of the school shootings when people are talking about getting fame before they're killing, or they're sending out press releases beforehand, or the equivalent of press releases, or writing manifestos. I mean, that's where you see narcissism creep into it.
Is science studying this at all, Keith? Is medicine studying this at all? Is psychiatry studying it?
Some people are, yes. I mean, I do it in the psychology end, but psychology and psychiatry are pretty linked, so I'll talk at psychiatry conferences and vice versa. There isn't a lot of money for it from the National Institute of Health. This isn't considered a major health problem in the country. It's not getting funded like cancer research or other, you know, disorders are funded. But there's certainly some interest in it.
Let's go to TJ in Albert Lea, Minnesota now. TJ, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Good golly, what a great night to talk this subject, because I'm dealing with it with a family member to a very serious degree.
Oh, boy.
And this previous caller, this family member alternates between deep depression and egocentricity. My question is, well, is narcissism not just another term for egocentricity? Too much ego controlling, ego idolized? Tell me more.
You know that one of the early terms for narcissism was egophilia, sort of the love for your own ego. There is egocentrism. It's a big part of narcissism. There's also entitlement. You know, vanity. There's more to it than just focusing on your own ego, but that's a big component of it. In terms of vacillating with depression, I would definitely, you know, get some professional advice on that, because that could be something else going on. It could be bipolar. It could be an interesting combination of things. So I wouldn't do just self-diagnosis in a case like that.
Is it easy or difficult to spot someone who might be narcissistic?
It can be challenging when you first meet the person, because, you know, you're hiring somebody for a job, and no one says, look, my goal is to come here for 2 years, you know, just change the way everything's done just so I can get promoted by a bigger company and leave you guys in a mess. Or no one says, you know, I'm just going to date you for 6 months and dump you for somebody younger and more attractive as soon as I can. So people don't come out and just say it. So often the best way to spot somebody who's narcissistic is look at their track record. In personality research, we often say the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So if you look at somebody's track record pretty objectively, your guess is they're going to keep doing the same thing with you that they did with somebody else. And I think that's better than just trying to eyeball somebody.
Cheryl is in Phoenix, Arizona. Lots of rain there, Cheryl, I hear, huh?
Yes, it's flooded here terribly.
Jeez, couple deaths.
I'm not in the area of flood, though, so I'm fortunate.
All right, stay safe.
Yes, thank you. Well, what I'm calling about is I know this man that has gone from woman to woman that can't seem to have any relationships, and if he does have a relationship, it has to be about him. He says it has to be all about me, or he won't stay with them. Like if they have children, he doesn't want them, the children, to be first. He has to be number one, or he just eliminates them in his life, and he abuses them in the process because they won't make him number one. And I'm just wondering if that's narcissistic. I mean, he doesn't really care if he hurts anyone in the process.
Could be psychopath too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not diagnosing anybody, but that pattern you're describing is very narcissistic, especially the example I hear a lot is, you know, we had kids and my wife put the kids before me and it upset me. And I always find that mind blowing, because you think, well, you know, if there's a fire, I hope my wife takes the kids out before me. But with narcissism, that's a theme I hear a lot. It's, God, I lost all the attention. Now we have kids. I better move on and find somebody who can give me that attention.
Okay, we go now to Ben in Roanoke, Virginia, first-time caller. Always a pleasure, Ben. Good to have you with us.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Hope everything is good. I just have a question. What is the difference between a sociopath and someone that's narcissistic?
Yeah, sociopath is another one of those terms that often is used interchangeably with psychopath. One sort of comes out of a sociological tradition and one out of a psychological tradition. Again, I think what you'll find more with a sociopath is maybe a little more callousness, maybe a little more, you know, impulsivity or risk-taking. It's very similar to a psychopath.
But is it easy or difficult to pinpoint the difference?
I think the main difference is that impulsivity is, and maybe a little more callousness, a little more interpersonal callousness with somebody who's a psychopath, or if we call somebody a sociopath, it's people maybe a little more high on the exploitative end, but they're not so much focused on making themselves look like number one.
And
but
where does this?
These things blend together. You know, they're not perfect, bright lines. You say, well, you're in this box, and you're in this box, and you're in this box. These things, they share characteristics. You know, it's like you gotta get Mexican food with Chipotle. It's kind of the same ingredients mixed up in different ways, and that's what we see with a lot of these personality disorders or traits.
Phobias. Do phobias fit into any of this?
It's an interesting question, but I can't think of any that do. Maybe if I thought about it some more, but, you know, the classic phobias of public speaking are things that, you know, if you're narcissistic, you wouldn't have. I mean, people who are narcissistic do well in public. They usually do well under social pressure. So I would think, if anything, there'd be some more of a negative correlation with phobias.
All right, let's go to Jeff in Lockport, New York, east of the Rockies. Jeffrey, take it away. Hello, Jeff. See if my phone's working here. Nope, it is not working. I don't think so. Jeff, you there? Nope, he's not there. Oh, well, that happens sometimes, Keith.
It's okay.
Yeah, why? That happens sometimes. Yep, yeah, absolutely. Anyway, back to you, back to me as we get into this. Do you find that events change people to become more narcissistic? Mm. Like bad economies and things like that?
Yeah, there's a couple great questions in there. There's this idea that, you know, when the economy goes down, narcissism should drop. And when the economy goes back up, you know, it should come up. And that was sort of the model we saw in the Great Depression. You have this sort of vibrant economy, and then it collapses, and then we have the greatest generation. I don't know if we're seeing that now. I mean, we're really looking to see if the changes we're seeing in the economy is changing some of the narcissism. We're not seeing it with certain things. And we might not really know for a couple more years, but it's really an interesting question, and it's certainly possible. The second way of answering that is what they call situationally acquired narcissism. So what happens when you take a normal kid and you throw him in, you know, put him in a professional basketball team, or he suddenly becomes a team star or something and gets a lot of fame and attention? Do people acquire narcissism from that? And that's something people talk about. We don't have good science for that, but it's certainly things that, you know, there's stories of people who basically let fame go to their head and leads to problems.
If you're a parent and you see traits of narcissism in a kid, do you do anything about it?
You know, I think in general, as a parent, what you can do, and I think this is really good practice, but, you know, just for any parent, is you try to model decent behaviors to your kids, but you also reward your kids for being compassionate, showing some empathy for others suffering. When your kid screws up, they take responsibility for it.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you're sort of buffering narcissism in a way. So I don't think I wouldn't be panicked if my 10-year-old was talking about how cool he was. I just sort of try to model good behavior and focused on the compassion and stuff.
Keith, thanks. A fascinating couple hours here as we talk about the narcissism epidemic. When we come back, Lynn McTaggart, we're going live to the United Kingdom next.